So, also, guys, usually with Mercedes, if they start off great, they end up really bad. If they start off bad, just know that they're learning their car and it's going to be a great weekend.
It's lights out and away we go. Bottas has got his teammate right alongside him already. But we have a safety car now deployed.
Welcome, welcome to Euros Open. I know it's been a while since you guys have heard my voice, but I'm back now. Just a short backstory of like what happened. While I was on medical leave, and then I had to take leave to recover from medical leave. But I'm back now and hopefully more consistently. But I think we are going to be a bit more consistent. And yeah, hi Langa, how have you been?
I'm good. I'm good. It's good to hear. It's good to talk to you again. What did you say about, did I mishear you? Did you say something about Silverstone?
No, I haven't said anything about Silverstone. I just said
I
I was
was
on
like,
medical
what?
leave.
Sorry, I've clearly had far too many beers today. But I'm good, thank you. And you know, all that stuff aside, how have you been?
Well, the last time we spoke, I was still heartbroken over Mercedes, but I mean, judging from this weekend, I am great. I'm fantastic, actually.
So you're not heartbroken anymore. You guys get a double podium. Was it the first time this year, first time since Brazil, where you guys finished P1 and P2? I mean, you have to get straight into it, I guess. How
I
real
think.
is this? A lot of cars have brought upgrades. Sorry, brought upgrades. Obviously, we would have seen it at Imola. That didn't happen. They were at Monaco, but Monaco is just a weird track. Is this real? I have to ask that.
Well, there's so many things to consider, right? Sometimes cars being upgrades and the upgrades are track specific, you know. We can't all get excited because, well, sometimes upgrades are track specific, but from what I've observed the entire weekend from practice, 1, 2, and 3, and even qualifying, I can say that this is like, there's a bit of hope. Mercedes fans can have hope. You know, it's okay to have hope. It's okay to drink that hopium, guys. Not that we're back, but we might be well on our way to being back. It's not like in Brazil last year when we won. Well, he won. But
he won him.
Him.
Hashtag him. Yeah.
He who shall not be named won. It was because, well, every other car had stopped. Well, every other team had stopped developing their cars. So we were mostly on par with all these other teams. Well, just it was a fake win, to be honest. Not saying this because I have a judge agenda, but it was really a fake win, and it did set us back a couple of races, like 8 races back. But it is okay to have hope now, Mercedes fans. And this is me who's talking. You know, I barely ever miss.
No, you don't. That's one thing I know for sure. But I think, like what you're saying, yeah, FP1, FP2, FP3, throughout the weekend, we've always known that this version of the Mercedes is not a great qualifying car, kind of almost similar to Red Bull in that perspective, which is that it's a car that is much better suited to the race. I think cars in the ground effect era where overtaking is possible, or at least following, let me put it that way, is possible, that you're going to have a bias towards the race because you can work your way through the field if you genuinely have a lot more pace. And like Mercedes had it today. I actually thought, like, beginning of the race, with Checo in P11 and Hamilton P5, I thought, okay, well, you know, if they get a decent start, if Checo gets a decent start, that he could be racing Hamilton by then, but he was so far down the road and even got beaten by Russell, who started behind him. That thing is very, very real. I think if you want to make some sort of comparison about Red Bull and Mercedes, where they are in terms of relative performance, obviously Mercedes isn't faster than Red Bull right now, but the fact that Checo was beaten by Russell, who started a position behind him, yeah, sure, he got a better start on softer tires, but That says a lot, I think. I think I agree with you. But you mentioned FP1, FP2. Like, what did you see through the practice sessions this weekend that gave you that hopium, as you call it?
For example, okay, well, this is what happens basically for me when I watch F1 during the weekend, right? Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So on Friday, I basically focus on my team. I don't really care about other teams during practice because I'm just really curious as to what my team will do. So on Friday, Mercedes.
You just like me.
So on Friday, right, we saw Mercedes testing out. Well, everyone else started on a test tire. Mercedes started on mediums. And then they did, I think, long runs. They didn't do any quiet. They didn't do any hot laps. They did long runs. Switched to the test tires when everyone else was on slick tires, actually. And they tested that tire. And, well, they did one hot lap. Both drivers did one hot lap on the soft towards the end. And it wasn't really, really representative of the times because this field was so spread apart. De Vries was like top five and all of that. So I just think that the drivers didn't have enough testing time to test all the drivers and see like the true pace, right? Cool. FP2, I remember there was so much hysteria on the timeline on Twitter that I just literally told people to just calm down. It's practice for a reason. And what I've noticed also off of my team is that during practice, they really do practice. Like, they really do try everything out. They don't focus on hot laps. They don't focus on long runs. They focus on everything, you know, that both drivers had different setups. I think Lewis had a low downforce wing and George had a high downforce wing. It could be the opposite, but I just know that they were running two different setups. And during FP2, we did test out the test tire, which will be used later on in the season in Silverstone. Lewis wasn't happy with that tire at all. He really wasn't. I remember listening to his onboard and he was really just not happy with it. And we tested out the mediums, I think, for about four laps, which was also long runs. Then we did the hot laps towards the end of the session as well. And they did, well, if you believe practice, then, like, not that you believe practice, but if you think practice is representative of the race, then you would have had lost hope. But from the times, they were pretty decent. I think at some point, Lewis was like 6/10 off of Max. And George was like behind him at P8. Well, they were switching, actually, they were just switching between P6, P5, and P8. And then we went to final practice, which is Saturday morning. What I saw Saturday morning gave me so much hope because we did, I think, five laps with the soft tire before we switched into medias, right? And Lewis was in the garage for a very long time, so you could tell that they were changing up his setup a bit. But Lewis was P2, well, P3 actually, he was P3, just 6/10 also off of Max. I remember, I don't think it was Checo, I don't even know who, I think it was Checo. To be honest, practice, I just focus on my team, watch onboards and timings and everything. But I think it was Checo, and then this first person was obviously Max. And from P3, you could tell that our long runs were actually great. Even on the intermediates, funny enough, they're really great. They're not far off of the top two, which we think at this point the top two was. Going to this race, we thought the top two was Ferrari. And no, we thought the top three were Red Bull, Ferrari, and Aston Martin. And Mercedes was like top four, challenging the top two and three. But we got into FP3 and Lewis was like, excuse me, P3. And that's when I was just like, yes. So also, guys, usually with Mercedes, if they start off great, they end up really bad. If they start off bad, just know that they're learning their car and it's going to be a great weekend. So yeah, like FP3, FP1, FP2, FP3 were just representative of everything.
That's, yeah, I think you got it spot on. Like, obviously, like, depending on where you are, like, in the field, you'll be running different setups, trying different things. Obviously, Barcelona is a high downforce circuit. I think, excuse me, like you were saying, for Mercedes, there's still so much learning that they need to do. So to split the strategies in terms of the practice strategies was super, super important. And because they're going to need to learn about how their car performs, for example, in a high downforce setup around a circuit which has a lot of like High speed corners, for example, even though you know that in the race you're going to do like a high downforce wing, for example, right? And how much inherent downforce and mechanical grip there is within the car. So like I'm totally with you, and it's like super impressive what Mercedes have done, because you know, when I was chatting to Naz last week, we spoke about how after Bahrain, Toto was just like, this thing is a piece of shit. He may have actually said those words verbatim on television to start, just to like sort of emphasize where the car was at that time. Obviously, at that point, they pulled the trigger towards getting a new direction. So there's a lot of stuff that they just have to learn about the car and a lot about the setup right now. So like you'll see a lot of that throughout practice versus a team like Red Bull. Yeah, yeah.
About after final practice on Saturday, Toto was like, we actually know where the car is right now. We don't need to learn. We just need to get it the right. We just need to get it into the right windows and right setups. But we know what the car is. So, like, we know where the car is.
Okay. Well, I mean, I hear you, but you know, Toto is also a master of managing deception.
Yes, he's also a liar. We can actually see he's a liar.
He's the of the old team of all the team principals. Like, I think he's the best at hiding that he actually just lies. But I, you know, like what you said, obviously Mercedes were doing a whole lot of that because they will have to continue to learn. I think something that we'll get onto in a little bit, like Charles Leclerc, even last year in the Ferrari, when the Ferrari, you know, somehow managed to finish third in a two-horse race for the constructors' title at the back end of last year, he said that like it's obviously Ferrari up until that time had done a phenomenal job to get back in the fight for the front of the field, but it's going to be just as difficult to get, you know, once you are in second or third, it's going to take the exact same amount of effort to make that little bit of difference. For example, look at how Aston Martin have jumped from like P7 to, well, they're currently now after this weekend, P3 in the championship, constructors-wise. It's going to take that amount of effort, if not more, to get to the front. So that explains a whole lot of the stuff. But to get onto qualifying then, right, after all that you've said, your boy, hashtag him, threw up an absolute stinker. Qualifies P12 George Russell. Like,
before you get into it, can you see? Oh my god! Oh my god!
Yeah,
that boy had my head hot. I think for a good 20 minutes, I was so upset. There was a point where I even took off my wig. I was just like, I can't believe this guy did this. You know how?
Not taking off your wig. What do you mean?
Like, my head was hot. Like, my whole body was hot. I was upset. I can't believe I was that upset. But basically, George threw a stinker. He had been struggling the whole weekend compared to Lewis. His times were like really bad. But that's because it was on a different setup. But we're not going to get into that because practice is practice. We can't compare the times during practice. It doesn't really make sense to compare the times during practice because what we're trying to do during practice is learn the car. And because we had a new car, we had to learn, which was on a traditional circuit than a street circuit, which is Monaco. We had to learn it from scratch again, you know. But going to qualifying, I mean, George literally did not have to do that. Guys, I was so upset. I think I called him a rat 5 times. You can go through my timeline. I called him a rat 5 times. I was so close to threatening him, but I did not do that because I had to keep calm because I'm a lady. But
you'll also get banned from Twitter if you actually threaten him. Those things don't happen on Elon Musk's blue app these days.
Oh my God, guys, I've been suspended 4 times. My account has been locked 4 times because of Formula One. I need to stop tweeting about that sport, actually. I really need to stop tweeting about it. But going to qualifying, we looked really great. Q1, we looked really great. I think Q2, we topped the charts. Well, Lewis did. I don't care about the other one. But during Q3, there's an onboard. You can look at both onboards, Lewis and George's onboard, where they are, I think it was just about the last, no, it was Q2, not Q3, because George didn't make it to Q3, it was Q2, where Lewis was right behind George, and Lewis thought that George was on his cool down lap. A cool down lap is basically just after posting a time and just cooling down your engine and recharging and not cooling it down, like also just like recharging it, making it reaching its maximum so that it can carry you through your hot lap. So Lewis thought that George was on his cool down lap, and they were right behind each other, actually, like right behind each other from the last turn, from the last corner to the pit straight. And there's no way that George didn't see Lewis, guys. They had been following each other for a while. I saw the onboards, both of them. And just as about, Lewis said that he thought George was giving him a tow, right? He thought they were giving each other tows. But just as Lewis is about to overtake him, George squeezed them out. And that's when I lost all my shit. I'm sorry for my language, but like, I lost all my shit. It just brought me back to how terrible George has been this season.
Can I'm going to have to into just a little bit there, like in a partial, and this is like a partial defense of George Russell. I think
no,
that was a failure. Wait. So what had actually happened, like you said, they were on alternate run schedule. So George Russell was supposed to be on a hot lap, right? And then he made a mistake or something happened on the lap, so he aborted his hot lap. So Hamilton is behind him on a warm up lap. Wait, I'll tell you. Right. And then Russell was on a hot lap, aborted the lap. So then they were now on both like cool down laps, or whatever you want to call it, right? So George Russell's going slowly. I think there was an issue with signs on George Russell's right-hand side, right? Either he had to let him pass or he was passed by signs, I can't remember, whatever. Mercedes should have communicated to both the drivers that, like, you know, that, like, guys, Hamilton's coming up behind you. He's about to start his flyer, because as much as you're on a cool-down lap, you're coming around the final turn 13 down the main straight. Obviously, he's going to be flooring it by then. And George Russell had initially been intended to be on an alternate strategy, but then because of the error on the lap, aborted the lap and was going to start another flyer. And that's how we end up with the situation. But, of course, like you said, he does have mirrors. And the fact that he perhaps didn't look in his left-hand mirror, where Hamilton was coming down the racing line, is very, very sus. I'm with you. But well, what are you going to say?
I was saying that also Lewis had to abort his lap. There was a point where he had to abort his lap. So they were both on flying laps. They were supposed to be both on flying laps. And all I'm saying is that George had mirrors. His mirrors weren't dirty. That's for sure. They clean them all the time. He could see Lewis down from turn 13 to turn 12. From turn 12, actually, to turn 13 to the main straight. And of course, Sainz was on the right, but all I'm saying is that George knew Lewis was behind them from, I think, turn 10. That's how deep it was. But anyways, he didn't make it to Q3, so that was my vindication, and Lewis's car was not that damaged. It was just his front wing. So, but before we get into the race, I need to just talk about George Russell, guys. We look back at last year. Of course,
here we go. Yeah, here we go.
George finished on top of Lewis last year, right? Cool, great. Doesn't mean anything, because half of the season Lewis was testing out different setups. He had sensors on his car during races. His car had a lot of weight. Basically, Lewis was out driving that car at some point. George Russell just was smooth sailing. He didn't test out anything. He was just enjoying life. That's how he finished. It was easier for him to finish than Lewis, because Lewis's car had a lot of weight and was heavier than George's. He was testing out different things. And so when they stopped testing out, when they stopped using him as a lab rat, that's when Lewis started performing to his best, to the best of his abilities that we all knew that he could do. And then you get to this year, George Russell first race. He offers the team for team orders. Like, bro, why can't you just overtake Lewis on track? You are so desperate for a title fight when you're not even like you are not in, no, you're not desperate for a title fight. You're just desperate to prove that you're better than Lewis. I don't know in what world you live in, but every time you see Lewis or you're on Lewis's gearbox, my guy, why can't you just pass him on track? Like, he does pass you. Why do you need to let the team intervene when he's clearly the faster car? And every time he mentions team orders, Lewis drops him, like, three seconds on his head. I mean, you look at today's race, Lewis is, like, 10 seconds ahead. And at some point, when Lewis is coming out of the pits, he was five seconds behind Lewis. He could have ate up that time, but he didn't. Lewis dunked 10 seconds on his head. And that's it. Like, I just can't stand how whiny he is. He wants to be pushed. He wants the team to always be on his side. He wants team orders when Lewis just drives, you know. Like, there's always this thing that Lewis says that I will win on the track and I'll fight on the track. And I think George Russell should also do that, because my guy, you don't look great. You've been asking for team orders ever since Bahrain. We're at my God, I can't stand him.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I think like obviously, and you know, the only thing I totally agree with you, like, in terms of the whininess, it's quite extreme. I think he needs to get Lewis out of his head, right? Because up until the time where Mercedes is the lead constructor and, like, they're the only two fighting for the championship, right? What he's doing is not acceptable. Like, he reminds me a lot of Nico Rosberg, Jenson Button, when they were Hamilton's teammates at Mercedes and McLaren. It's super unhealthy to be so hyper focused on Hamilton, almost forgetting that there's a job to do, there are races to be won, there are constructors' points to be won. And I think I said this last week, but I'll say it again. Like, I think for me, in 2022, like, the thing about the whole narrative about Russell beating Hamilton in the Drivers' Championship was, like, how unbothered Hamilton was by that. He really didn't care. And that was just a sign, because, like, Hamilton, like, sees the bigger picture, which is that we need to get this car forward so that we can fight for championships. And when that car is fighting for championships, believe you me, Hamilton is going to wipe the floor with Russell. I used to think they were a little bit closer than they really are, but you only need to look at the second half of last year to fully understand just how dominant. And obviously, against Russell, obviously he is. But then, you know, throughout his whole career, Hamilton has always been a second half of the season driver. Always, always, always. He did it to Verstappen. He did it to Bottas numerous times, right? He would do it to Rosberg. I think it was the 24th. Pardon?
He did it to Rosberg. I just needed to say that.
Sorry, I lost you there. Yeah, no, like, he does it to everyone, where he just grinds you down by unrelenting consistency. So, yeah, I'm with you. But, like, obviously someone else who didn't have a great time in quali was Charles Leclerc. Like, it was, I mean, P19, no matter where, yeah, it's, no matter who you are or what you think, that Ferrari is not P19. Carlos Sainz qualified that car on the front row. What is really interesting for me, and I'd be keen for your thoughts, is, like, almost everyone assumed that there was damage or something wrong with Leclerc's car. And as far as I know, listening to the commentary and everything, Ferrari found nothing wrong with that car. But, like, I can't believe that it was 19th on pure pace, going in, like, you know, knocked out in Q1. Like, what are your thoughts on Leclerc specifically, but also Ferrari, like, more broadly this weekend in a qualifying sense?
Only Ferrari actually can bring upgrades to a circuit and go back instead of going forward, number one. to be honest, Carlos had the upgrades, had a new car. Well, it went more to the Red Bull side. Well, the car does look like a bit of a Red Bull car than it does look like a Ferrari. But Carlos did have the upgrades and Leclerc did it, right? But during practice also. somehow I caught on that. They were like putting, they were sitting on like the same lap times at some point. Even Matthew Brundle, no, Brundle wasn't in the commentary box this weekend. Jenson Button did say that. Excuse me, it's quite impressive. It's quite impressive that Charles and Carlos are both setting the same lap times and everything else. We're going to qualify. I'm not gonna lie, I think that was just the stinker from Charles. We actually have to have a conversation about Charles Leclerc, guys. He is just not championship material. Yeah. He's inconsistent. He has so many bozo moments. He's just not that guy, and we just need to be honest about it. So maybe the car did not have pace, which is great because he didn't have the same car as Carlos. But if it was Hamilton in that car, he would have made Q3, and I can bet that with my life.
Yeah, no, of course. But I mean, that's the thing, right? Is that Carlos Sainz put the car P2. He qualified in the front row of the grid. I don't know. Like, I genuinely think of one of the weekends where there's no race, we need like a full-on Ferrari debrief. Like, I don't know how they've got themselves from a position where they were the fastest car, definitely for the first half of last year, depending on what you want to say, right? And then they had all those clangers. When was that car on fire? Was it, was there, there was a car that was on fire. It was in Austria, Sainz's
car. No, it was Barcelona, actually.
Was it Barcelona? No, I think Leclerc binned it.
No, he didn't. Last year, it just stopped.
Binned it in France. Oh, yeah. It just stopped. Barcelona just stopped. But yeah, it did catch on fire in Austria. So they had all these issues around engine reliability. And the theory goes that, you know, because the engines have been frozen for this regulation set between 2022 up until the end of 2025, that what you want to do is like have a fast engine if unreliable, and then once it's unreliable, you can always fix reliability issues, but you have a basically fast engine. And I've said this on Twitter and whatever. I completely accept that as a philosophy, especially over a 4-year cycle. Coming into 2023, there was a lot of positivity around Ferrari. The sounds that were coming out of their garage was that they fixed the reliability issues, and therefore, with the engine that they have, you know, they were going to be up there. They said quite publicly that they'd met all their targets in the wind tunnel, et cetera, et cetera. But of course, I think just as a general rule, no matter what the business is or what the whatever it is that you're doing, if you hit all of your targets quite easily in the off season, your targets are probably not high enough. And as we've seen this year, from the Ferrari perspective, Red Bull shifted the goalposts, right? The RB19 is significantly faster than the RB18. Mm-hmm. And that notwithstanding, Aston Martin and Mercedes have now got the jump on them. Like, that whole operation at Ferrari needs to be dismantled. They need less interference from the corporate Ferrari. They need entirely racing, not just even racing, but Formula One people running that operation, and to leave them alone. But like I said, I think honestly, we're going to need like a proper debrief of Ferrari, and it's going to take me more than like, you know, the hour that we have today to discuss that, because, you know, Leclerc, I hear you with the bozo moments. I hear you that maybe he's not quite world championship material, but he's not qualifying P19 in that car. Not when you've got the likes of McLaren qualifying P3 and P7, or P9 rather, with Norris and Oscar Piastri and Alpine just far down the road. I don't know. I'm just...
You know what I think?
I don't know. Yeah.
I think for Ferrari, well, basically that's what they did last year, and they're still doing it this year, which is a bit, which is setting them back a bit. They focus on qualifying than the race. I mean, some tracks are very track position dependent, but if you know that you can make it past, like if you know that you can make it through the field, then you don't really have to focus on qualifying that much. I think that's what Mercedes has learned, that you can't set up the car for qualifying when there's a race, and that's where the points are scored, you know. And Ferrari just focuses on qualifying so much. Back to your point about Leclerc qualifying P19. I just think that he was having like a very terrible stinker yesterday. His car was changed altogether today, but still. But then with Ferrari also, it's just not the pace, it's just not the drivers, it's the corporation as a whole. Get rid of the Italians, get rid of every single Italian in that team, and I tell you, they will be fighting for, well, podiums.
No, they will. The whole of Maranello will come for not just you, but us. We'll leave them alone where that is concerned. But I mean, we did have a race today. 100. I haven't fact checked this, so if I'm misspeaking, I put my hands up. But I was listening to something just before we started recording, and we're recording this just a few hours after the race. But apparently there were 107 overtakes today. 107 overtakes at Barcelona, like in the turbo hybrid era, right? The guys used to complain so much that, like, at Barcelona, because of the various high speed corners from left to right, etc., the moment you would get within about 5 seconds of the car in front of you, your engine would overheat, your tires would overheat, everything. Your car's basically fucking about to go on fire, and you can't do anything. So you just have to hold back. Like, it's impossible to overtake. Now, with the ground effect, right, you're able to follow closely, and therefore, even with the removal of that final chicane, which I think was made an incredible difference, right? We had overtaking all over the show. So I want to ask you, what are your thoughts generally on ground effect? Number one, right? Number two, where do you think Formula One is? Because I know a lot of people are very, very, not even just concerned, bored by Red Bull's dominance. Of course, Max wins today. It's the 7th win of the season for a Red Bull car. And I think thirdly, what are your thoughts on Barcelona and the Spanish Grand Prix more broadly?
First of all, 2 years isn't dominance. We need to get that correctly. 2 years isn't dominance. You had 8 years of dominance, but we'll get back to that.
Yes.
From what I've observed today and throughout the weekend, I think the ground effect is like playing a huge role in terms of like the track, and that final chicane being removed was actually really a really great thing for racing this weekend. I'm going to make an example between Sainz and Lewis, right? Well, that's an overtake I was mostly paying attention to during the race. And also Perez and all these other fateful cars, because, well, he had a Bozo moment during qualifying, and he qualified, I think, P11. Basically, what I'm saying is that during Sainz and Lewis's battle that we barely saw on TV, you had to watch an onboard for that. Thank you very much, Sky Sports. We saw that it was very easy for Lewis to follow Carlos without complaining about his tires, then complaining about his engine overheating. There was a point when Lewis was less than 2 seconds, well, 2/10 of a second behind Carlos, and was made that overtake so quickly and so effortlessly that Bono even asked him about his tires, and homeboy was just like, no, my tires are great, the balance is great, the car is great. So I think some of the 2022 regulations were actually really great and pretty great, and they are successful a bit. Well, not talking about all of them, I'm talking about some of them. And Barcelona was pretty interesting, because not only did we have that many overtakes, we really did have a bit of good racing. You know, I kind of enjoyed it. It wasn't that boring. Like, it was boring, but it wasn't that boring. Excuse me. Besides Lewis making it very exciting, because homeboy qualified P5 because he just wanted to make the race interesting. I'm telling you guys, he didn't qualify P5 because he bottled his lap or anything. He just wanted to make the race interesting because he likes to make things harder for himself. And yes, I'm saying this because I'm a Hamilton fangirl, but still, we all know that's true. But yeah, like all in all, Barcelona was a great track. It was a traditional circuit, and we saw a lot of cars' pace. Back to Alpine and McLaren. I think a lot of teams also made the same mistake Ferrari did, where they set up their cars for qualifying. Like, sharp track position is great, guys. It's great to have track position, but it's also dependent on having a great start. It's also dependent of like your defense against other cars. You can't have track position and not know how to defend. That is really terrible. And you can't have track position and not know how to read the room. For example, first lap, Max, Sainz, went a bit. Where they had a bit of a bozo moment there, and Lewis backed off. But the way Norris was so impatient, he rammed himself into Lewis's car. Thank God Lewis's car was not affected in all of that. But all I'm saying is, it's just, you need to be patient. You can have track position, but you need so much more. Like, there's so much more to having a good race and being a championship in Formula One. It's just not your team and a fast car. I'm sorry. We can see that with Checo. Checo has a fast car, but his bozo moments cost him so much.
I mean, I have to defend Lando a little bit. I think that moment was a little bit, almost kind of couldn't see it coming. But maybe I'm just like too fair. I'm too nice to Lando. And in terms of the setup, like, again, just McLaren. I think, you know what? Actually, we're just going to need like one episode to talk about Ferrari and McLaren, the two most successful teams in the sports history, who are doing some very, very ridiculous things. But, you know, McLaren did concede that a lot of what happened in terms of qualifying yesterday was, what's the word that I'm looking for? What happened in qualifying yesterday was they got in the sweet spot. Their car is really, really good with tire warm-up, for example. It was really, really cool yesterday. We saw that even in Monaco with their car and their car's performance. So I don't think that they had necessarily set up for quali, but rather that quali sort of flattered them a little bit. But they, you know, they have also brought significant upgrades. They've not even an upgrade, actually, but more of a entire concept change, which they recognized quite early. So it'll be interesting to see where they are in about a year's time. And but just talking about like racecraft and that sort of thing, did you pick up the incident between Guan Yu Zhou and Yuki Tsunoda, where Tsunoda eventually got a penalty for it? Did you see that?
To be honest, I really didn't. I've been so
no, I've fair. So confused. And I thought it might go missing because, like you said, the race direction at Sky is important. But I'd be really interested, like, with the people listening to hear some comments and feedback. So Yuki Tsunoda got a penalty for his incident with Guan Yu Zhou, but it was actually not too dissimilar from the way that Max and Sainz were racing. And I think there's just a general sort of debate that needs to happen between the drivers in Formula One about when can a car on the outside sort of assume that the corner is theirs. So if you haven't seen that, please just, you know, go have a look at it. Yuki Tsunoda and Guan Yu Zhou. Tsunoda gets a penalty in the end for it. And let me know what you think. Let us know what you think, because yeah, I'm not sure that Tsunoda deserved a penalty for it.
I actually have a comment on that.
You know, the race, pardon?
I actually have a comment on that. Besides the racing and the inside line and everything and the corner and everything, I just think that the FIA is being very harsh on Yuki and has been for a good 2 years now since he's been in Formula One, actually. But we'll have a conversation about that when we are tackling other issues. Like, we'll have an episode dedicated, I promise you guys, to like racism in the sports, not just against Lewis, but against Asian drivers, because Martin Brundle did also make a very snide comment about Zoe and Yuki today when they were having the little battle. But we'll get into that. And I also just have to, I think the rules state that when going into a corner, the car that's a bit ahead of the other car can't stake claim to that corner. you look at Monza 21, going Lewis and Max are going into a corner. Lewis literally was a bit ahead of Max going into that corner, but Max wouldn't yield. So Lewis also just didn't want to yield at that point. So, but who got the penalty was Max. I mean, we could call it a racing incident at that time, given the race directing in 2021, which we know that it was horrible. But the rules clearly state that if a car goes into a corner and one of the car that's ahead of another car gets to claim that corner. It's just the way it is. You can go through the FIA regulations. I've gone through them since 2021. I know what's right and wrong. I had to go through them, but yeah.
Yeah, there's also the whole confusion about what constitutes being sufficiently alongside, right, versus ahead. But like, yeah, okay, again, please, guys, go look at it. Let us know what you think about that incident. But as for the race, it would be impossible. We've probably got about 20 minutes left to try and cover everything that's happened in that race. Obviously, Leclerc started to climb up the field, drop back down, just an overall nightmare of a day. McLaren, Norris's race was ruined from the get-go. But Aston Martin, what just happened? What happened there? Obviously, Alonso damaged his car in quali, which meant that, you know, he ended up qualifying P9, P8, somewhere there. But they looked awful in the race, and they were just going backwards. Even when Lance Stroll was able to take advantage of the touch between Hamilton and Norris on lap one, Hamilton very quickly came back at him and picked him off without much battle. Not a good day for Aston Martin. Like, where do you think their team is? What do you think about what happened to them in this race today?
I cannot begin to explain how happy I am that Aston Martin is struggling again. Uncle Alonso needs to go.
Is it only because of Alonso that you're praying on their downfall?
Yes, Uncle Alonso needs to go. But to be honest, besides being really happy that Aston Martin is struggling, I just think that it's more of a reflection of Mercedes than it is on Aston Martin. You look at the side pods. No side pods concept. That was terrible.
I agree with you fully, yeah.
It was a terrible concept. They struggled, and it made Aston Martin look like they were dominant. Aston Martin isn't dominant than Mercedes. It was just the side pods, like no side pods concept, actually just tested the driver's skills more than it tested. It just tested the driver's skills, actually. Because you look at now, they were far off of Mercedes, like very far off. They were back in the midfield. They couldn't even challenge the Ferraris. And it also goes back to how the Ferrari have progressed a bit in terms of changing their car concepts, but they can't also reach the Mercedes because it just shows how bad the no side pod concept was. But all I'm saying is that Aston Martin and Ferrari are now challenging each other. It's not going to be a challenge between Aston Martin and Mercedes. It's going to be a challenge between Aston Martin and Ferrari, and that's just how it's going to be. It goes back to what Toto said post-race, which actually annoyed me. It really did annoy me. Toto said that they needed a bit of shock for them to change their car concept. As of 2021, it was not a shock enough for all of us. Why would you need to give a shock for a year and 8 races? Could have changed their car concept, but that win, the Fugazi win, and Brazil set us back. It set us back 8 races. But that's, I'm actually digressing. I digress, guys. But yeah, that's just it. Aston Martin is not falling off. It's just that was its true pace. It's just that Mercedes has the best driver lineup. I gagged at that. Sorry, guys. I just can't give George's props. But it does have the best driver lineup. And with the right car, they can maximize that. And we saw that today.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is so right in the context of that this is a development race. Like, I was just making comments about Ferrari earlier this evening, and like, as much as like I'm saying that the Ferrari has gone backwards, right? The Ferrari this year versus the Ferrari from last year is faster. Like, that's the thing about Formula One. It's about the speed of your development. You've almost, what is the phrase that people always use? You've got to go forward to stand still, right? So it's not as if the Ferrari, the car that they've got this year, is a slower car than the car that they had last year. It's just that the rate at which they have developed last year's car to this year's car is much slower than the rate in which everyone else has developed their car. And I think what you're saying is quite right. Aston Martin today was more or less where they are, right? But, you know, the jump that Mercedes have made in particular in terms of race pace is greater than anything. It's not like Aston Martin was suddenly cart horses. But I would be, in their defense, I would sort of say that that car, we've always known straight line speed and performance around high speed corners was always the weakness. I didn't think it would be as bad as we saw today, but we always knew that, like, that was the general weakness of the car. I think Montreal is going to be super interesting because obviously now we've got the upgraded Mercedes to see how it performs around slow speed corners. And Montreal does have a lot of slow speed corners with a lot of high speed sections. So Aston Martin and Mercedes, I would expect, are going to be a lot closer in the race in Canada in 2 weeks. But yeah, I think what you're saying is absolutely right. Aston Martin are where they are. Sometimes you have bad races, that just happens. But like you said, I'm interested in the last part of that, where you said, you know, the shock, Toto said that they needed Bahrain as a shock. A lot of people, obviously, James Allison at Mercedes has come back into the technical director role. Remind me if am I saying that right? And
yes, you are.
Who's
yes,
the guy who was, yeah, who's the guy who was your technical, Elliot?
Is it Mike Elliot has moved who needs back to go to jail?
Chief technical operations officer or whatever they call it. Obviously, like you said, this car that we saw today has been in the pipeline since Bahrain. So obviously a lot of people are just like, oh, look, James Allison's back, you know, 2 weeks or two races or whatever it is, and suddenly Mercedes is back as a clear best of the rest. That's not quite how it works, is it? Like, this car has been... What? Cool.
So James Allison was on, like, had retired, right? But he would still get consulted by Mercedes, right? So as he was consulted after Bahrain or anything and everything, he did have an opinion on the car, and he did say, let's change the concept of the car back to what it was. So yes, James Allison did actually have a huge impact on the car that we got today. It's been coming since Bahrain, yes. But Mike Elliott and his war crimes he does take half the blame. Between him and Toto, someone has to take the blame. I think Toto has to take much of the blame because he's the boss. But all I'm saying is that, yes, the car has been in the pipeline, but it was just because of James Allison. And when he did officially come back, he continued on his concept, which was the side pod. So, yes, that's what happened.
Okay, no, fair enough. And of course, we also know that Hamilton has made comments, you know, earlier this season that they just basically didn't listen to him. they didn't listen to him last year, and they should have gone, presumably, in this direction a lot earlier. And it remains to be seen what will happen in that regard. But I mean, one of the final teams that I would like to talk about, last week's episode rather, we were very much on the SD Bestie. You know, we're all living on SD Bestie's island. What do you mean? Come on, like, I mean, SD Bestie.
I said Ocon. I said Ocon.
Yes. Oh, I misheard you. I thought you said, oh, come on. Yeah. Alpine in a very interesting place, and kind of in the middle of no man's land. But, you know, today, again, showing that there is genuine performance in that car. It's starting to look like a top five versus a bottom five. Again, as the teams converge, what do you make of Alpine this weekend? And where do you think that team is going to go? Because what we've essentially got now, I know it's not the case right now, but sort of peering into the future, Aston Martin have got Honda for, I know it's still 2026, but like it's 2.5 years. That's going to come now, where they essentially become a works operation with Honda as their sole engine supplier. Obviously Red Bull with Red Bull powertrains, Mercedes, Ferrari, Alpine. So you've essentially got the five works teams starting to form a little bit of a gap between the rest of the best of the rest. There are allegations or rumors that McLaren may try to get a works engine deal with Ford. But if Ford are going to pull the trigger on that right now, it is already quite late, although not impossible to pull off. So like, what do you think of Alpine this weekend, but also just like peering into the horizon, these five, can we call the pseudo works teams, and like the future of the sport, where in a cost cap era where you can't just outspend everyone, you know, to your heart's desire.
Funny you talk about the cost cap because you guys cheat a lot, but we'll get to that. what I wanted to say first before I got into Alpine is that you mentioned that Mercedes and Aston Martin will be kind of on the same pace going into Canada and Montreal, and I don't think that will be the case. I think Mercedes are just going to keep bringing like small upgrades. Sometimes upgrades don't work, but from Mercedes' track record, we've seen also that the small upgrades do kind of make up a huge difference. I'm not sure if they're bringing new upgrades to this other circuit, but usually small changes to our car usually elevates it or it just makes it worse. But what I'm saying is I think Mercedes is where it's at this point. It's not moving from second place. And it's just going to be a competition between Aston Martin and Ferrari. That's just how it is. Alpine. I think Alpine are on the right track, but they are not where they need to be. You know, I think Alpine are going to challenge McLaren. Well, McLaren's really bad at this point. But I just think Alpine is not as, like, it's on the right path, but it's not going to be as great overnight as we think it is. Fine, like, Ocon did get a podium in, they did get a podium in Monaco. To be honest, qualifying is really important in Monaco, and I don't remember what happened to Lewis in Monaco that much, but I know that he was having a really bad qualifying. Bono had to literally motivate him and stop Mass suicide. I joke, but it was really going to happen. I was going to kill myself on camera. Guys, I'm joking.
yeah.
But I think they just, like, they will do great if they capitalize off of other people's mistakes. I mean, we did see the battle between Alonso and Ocon today, and we saw that how Ocon actually defended quite late, and it was very dangerous. But that's Estibesti, and he was doing it against
Alonso. That was very funny. That was very, very funny. Like, I just kept thinking about when they were teammates and thinking these two do not like each other. Estibesti was being very naughty there. Like, it was, I don't know if that is hard defending. Some might say it's hard defending, but that in my books that wasn't on. But yeah, it was quite hilarious to watch. I love watching the little frictions that happen between particular drivers. Esteban was not going to give Alonso that place very easily in any way. But I cut you off. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
You know what was funny about that also is that when Ocon had to defend against Russell, he just did not. He was just like, okay, you can pass. But when it was Alonso, he was like, not on my watch, uncle. I'm going to fight for this position. And it was too late when he fought for that position. But it was very funny. But yeah, speaking into like the horizon and how the direction F1 is going, I think it would be pretty interesting going into like 2026, beyond 2026, and seeing like different teams have their own engine suppliers. I think Mercedes has to just be exclusive in terms of like their engine. I think all these other teams also just need to get off Mercedes's dick. Well, I'm sorry, guys. I don't mean to say it like that. I didn't mean to say like. But I just think every team needs to focus on their own engine supply. It will make for quite interesting field. We'll just know how different the teams are and the direction that they're going. Mercedes will focus on its own engines. Ripple Powertrains will focus on its own engines. Ford, I don't know if they will win, but it'll also focus on that. But to my knowledge, I might be wrong, but to my knowledge, McLaren has always had a Mercedes engine. So it will be very, very interesting to see how they will do with the Ford engine and Aston Martin with Honda. See, with Aston Martin is that they're not really used to like podiums and everything. It's just Alonso's experience that's just pushing them there. But we'll see it. I think Stroll Senior isn't really patient in terms of like the progress that he's making. I think he wants to win instantly. So that will actually cost them a lot. But we'll see. It's going to be very interesting, actually. I don't know if I'll still be watching the sport, guys, because if my goat leaves, I'm leaving. I'm joking. I'm so obsessed with the sport. I hate it.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think it's a fascinating horizon. I think this race today would, I hope, re-energize a lot of people. Yes, I mean, we didn't even really talk about it. You know, Verstappen still won by about 21 seconds, but it is possible to still enjoy the sport, you know, and see everything that's happening. And from a development perspective, Red Bull will be caught. I thought it was quite interesting that Toto mentioned the extra ATR time that they have, and the extra wind tunnel testing time that they have. And of course, I think, you know, a couple of people have asked me in conversation about when will the cost cap penalty that Red Bull incurred last year really take effect. I think we're actually already starting to see it. It's just that Red Bull are so far ahead. But what I think will be really interesting is its impact, not just in the second half of this year, but at the beginning of next year, because of course a lot of cars will be already starting to look to 2024, maybe not right now, but very, very soon. And Red Bull, you know, will have limited time to look at what they can do for 2024. So I think it's a super interesting time. This was really, really a fantastic race. And I think as we get to more traditional racing circuits, Silverstone, Monza, Spa, perhaps Suzuka later in the year, and Kota, for example, I think we're going to see some different things. Do you think Red Bull is going to win every race of the year?
No,
asked you this specifically.
No.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either.
Who's
going to take the first non-Red Bull win? Is it going to be Mercedes or? As I think, I'm going to put my stall out there, I think Aston Martin could do something, particularly at somewhere with a lot of low-speed corners, like Montreal.
Aston Martin, specifically Uncle Fernando Alonso, is not winning a damn thing on my watch. I will make sure of that. But the first non-Red Bull win is going to be Mercedes. We're getting the 104th win, 104th pole in Silverstone. Not saying Montreal, but we're getting it in Silverstone. and this is solely powered by division, guys.
Yeah, and listen, after what happened at Silverstone last year, like anything is possible. I think what was it? Max ran over debris. We had that, and through goes Hamilton. Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I've kind of given up. Like, as a Red Bull person, on Silverstone. I know Max won there under the title of the 70th anniversary Grand Prix in the COVID year, but yes, I don't know what juju you guys bring to that circuit.
Oh, we bang, massive juju for Max, yeah, me included.
I'm so tired. I really would love for him to win at Silverstone, but you know,
He's not smelling that win. He's not smelling that win, unfortunately. But before we're done covering that, I also just wanted to say something to my fellow F1 fans, really, especially on F1 Twitter. What I have observed from the past few weeks and past few races is that, sure, majority of us love Lewis. I love him with my whole heart. I mean, I would die for him. I would sell my whole family for him. Probably even give up my boyfriend. I'm joking, baby. I love you so much. I would never do that.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Oh, man. I'm joking, guys. I'm really joking. But what I've noticed is that once you get to enjoy the racing part of Formula One, the strategies, once you get to enjoy the timings, once you get to enjoy the pit stops, the tires, just everything about Formula One, not just focus on the driver, you'll get to enjoy the races. I mean, sure, the regulations aren't doing what they were supposed to do, what they were intended to do, but there's been a couple of good races. Besides Barcelona, well, before we got to Barcelona, Miami was a really good race, guys. It really was a good race. There was so many overtaking on track. There were different strategies on track. Besides the Red Bull 1-2, Lewis was having a really, really great race. I think George 2, but I really don't pay attention to George Russell. I really don't. But there were so many overtakes on track. So all I'm just trying to say is that I know it's very hard for us to fall in love with Formula One, especially after Abu Dhabi 21. But once you give yourself to that and you go into the track, well, you go into the race, you can be very optimistic off of your team. It could be P20 and you should just be very optimistic, because with Formula One, there also comes a lot of luck. You have to be at the right place at the right time and you can maximize off of that. So basically what I'm trying to say is that Formula One is a very huge corporation. It's a huge sport. You can't just focus on one thing. There's too many things to focus on, and then you won't get to enjoy the race. That's how I still love it. I have a love-hate relationship with it because of what it did to Lewis, but then you look at the other aspects of it and you're just fascinated by everything. And seeing all of that come together, that is amazing. It's really amazing. And I feel like we should all open our hearts to that and just enjoy the race for what it is. Enjoy Formula One for what it is, besides the drama. Just the race, and you can add the drama in where the drivers don't like each other and you will have a draw. Trust me, I'm always having fun. I mean, we did see today with Rosberg interviewing Lewis, that was very awkward, but it was very
that was funny.
Funny,
that was hilarious.
Oh my god, I've never had that, I've never laughed like that. Oh, that was so awkward and very funny. But yeah, that's all I just wanted to say.
My friend, I'm so happy to have you back. And I think that there couldn't be a more moving note to sort of end off with. I'll see you next week. There's no race next weekend, but you and I will chat next week. To the listeners, if you made it this far, thank you so much. We always appreciate it. Let us know what you think, and have a good week ahead, boys and girls. Behave yourselves. Until next time.
Bye, guys. And I will try to be more consistent. I promise I'm back. And yeah, it really is great being back. And it really is great talking to you, Langa, about Formula One, which is probably my first love. I think the people in my life think that I might be a tad bit over-obsessed with it. But I don't think there's nothing that gives me so much adrenaline like Formula One. No other sports. And I watch so many sports and I play tennis. But Formula One just brings out this passion in me. Yeah, I'll be back. I'm back. And I can't wait to do 20. Is it 20? No, it's like 18 other races with you guys.
Yeah, there's plenty. See you next week, friend.
Bye, guys.